I'm ready. The intent of this is to give the commissioners the high view of collective bargaining, not to get down into the weeds. So this session could take 30 minutes, it could take 2 hours, depending on what the commissioners want. So I'm going to start talking, and until you interrupt me, I'm going to keep talking. But if you do have questions, please do speak up and let me know. So earlier this week, I sent out a packet of information, kind of this opportunity for you to take a cup of coffee and read through it and get a little background on collective bargaining. But I thought we would start with that information and just kind of walk through it. And again, if you have questions, please let me know. But collective bargaining, there are so many rules regarding bargaining and what you can and cannot do, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't expect the commissioners to be professionals and the experts at it, but I thought you would probably prefer to have some knowledge of it, so if something did come up, you wouldn't stub your toe or feel left out of the loop. Anyway, this is a series of articles produced by LGPI, Local Government Personnel Institute. And they are one of the resources that I use on a pretty regular basis, just for ongoing day-to-day questions. You know, this came up, and you know, I'm thinking this, what do you think? And we're members of LGPI. And so by being a member, we have that resource to just call them up and say, you know, I've got this going on, and this is what I think should happen, and they help you develop a plan. Then we use city-county insurance if we are concerned about a claim. And we have to be able to identify the claim before city-county insurance will start providing information. Otherwise, they refer you back to your labor council or something else. So that's kind of the difference between those two. And then we do have labor council, Bruce Bischoff. And we use him mostly for collective bargaining. And then I email back and forth with him saying, you know, I'm going to contact the union about this. You know, here's the letter, what do you think? Get his approval before communicating with the union on a lot of things. But then he defers on things such as FMLA questions or things of that sort. He defers to LGPI because his expertise truly is collective bargaining. And LGPI has that the other expertise. So that kind of gives you the picture of those three resources and how and when I use those resources.
So those resources that we pay for, or how does that work?
LGPI, we pay a membership for that, and that's about $1,200 a year for that membership. Bruce is, he bills us hourly, but he doesn't bill us for everything. And he does not bill us for travel time. He lives in Sun River. And so he only bills us for the actual time that he's sitting at the table with us or on the phone with me on a long conversation. But if it's a quick phone call or a quick email, he doesn't bill us for those. So I think we get a good value from him. And then City County Insurance, the pre-loss legal, that's included as a part of our premiums. And they see it as a cost savings measure, trying to avoid claims. And so if you call pre-loss legal and develop a plan of action with them and follow the plan of action that's been developed, then if there is a claim, they waive the deductible. And on liability, that's a $10,000 deductible. And so that's their carrot to get you to call. And so before every termination, I call and go through it and make sure that we're covering all the bases. They know me on a first-name basis. Oh, Karen, hi!
It's a great resource.
Okay. Yeah. That's okay, because we know each other, we understand each other, and so it works out pretty well.
So with union situations, we have a pretty limited use of county council.
Correct, because that's not their expertise.
Sure.
And really, with the unions, you need somebody who knows what the current cases are.
Right.
They're going through either the ERB, the Employment Relations Board. What's the temperature of the ERB, which right now is very much pro-union. And that pendulum swings, it never swings all the way to pro-management, but it swings from neutral to more union, and right now we're way over here on the union side. So
initially, when we talked to Justin and Rich about being county council, Justin brought up the fact that he didn't have a lot of expertise in labor law and probably wouldn't see himself representing us in that. And Karen mentioned that we have this other relationship, and he was relieved.
Yeah, and it really is a specialized industry, and that's what he does. He works with unions, he bargains, he does that sort of thing. And so it's got us out of hot water a couple of times. I shouldn't say got, it kept us from getting into hot water a couple of times, and that's a very good thing. And if we can stay away from the ERB, that's a very good thing, especially right now where it's very much pro-union. So anyway, the first article is on how to develop a team to bargain your collective bargaining agreement. In the past, we have had myself and Bruce at the bargaining table, and then one management representative from whatever union we're working with. So for Teamsters, we would have one management representative from the sheriff's office. For the road, generally it's Matt, the assistant roadmaster, either Bob Naren's back before or Matt Scrivener now. And then for general employees, we would have a management person appointed to sit at the table with us. In the past, it was Greg Sweek, who was an elected official. And I would not recommend that we ask Mike to do that, because Mike would have a perceived, at the least perceived, conflict of interest, because he has a family member who is a represented employee. And so that would be a difficult position to put him in. And I have not heard him express an interest in doing that, but I'm just putting that out there that that could be a conflict of interest, so we would avoid that. And that's a question for down the road, because we've got the Teamsters coming up right now, and honestly, I've reached out to the sheriff and the undersheriff and have had no response from them, so I'm moving forward. I've already scheduled bargaining dates, and I'm getting things moving forward there. So hopefully I'll hear from them in the very near future. I do expect to get the first offer from Teamsters later this week, and so then we'll start crafting what we're going to do and how it's going to work and etc. So anyway, they said, who do you need? Experts on operations and experts on organizational benefits and finances. Experts on operations, that's why we want a management person such as from the sheriff's office to sit at the table with us, because they can give us more insight into how things work at the sheriff's office than I can. But they need to be involved on the front end with us and get things moving.
So in the past, has your representative been the sheriff or the undersheriff?
Actually, last time it was Sarah Smith, the assistant communications director, and she was very good. Very, very good. She had some very down-to-earth, reasonable thoughts. She goes, okay, this is how this is going to hit the members. This is what they're going to think. And she was pretty right on. So I thought it was very good, but my point is I need the sheriff and the undersheriff stepping up and being a part of planning for the bargaining. Experts on organizational benefits and finances. We rely on the finance department quite a lot when we get to, okay, how much would this cost of living cost us? How much would this cost of living? And so they help us develop options and find out what the cost impacts would be. If we change benefits, what would that cost impact be? And part of how Rhonda was pulled out of the union was that she helps us develop our plans, our options for collective bargaining, because she was doing all of the payroll information. So that's how she was pulled out of the union for doing that. So we work really closely with finance in developing our options. A reliable note taker or a recording device. And so in the past, that's been myself and Bruce. We both take notes, but I take more detailed notes than Bruce does. And then a professional chief negotiator, which is Bruce. Bruce takes the the lead on it, but I'm there kind of, you know, if they have a particular question about this, what's your thought process on how this is developed, and I'll step in and provide information on that. Who don't you need? And this is kind of an important one. Anyone who votes to ratify the contract, we don't want you at the table because of the political pressures put on you. And so, and it's just much better for to have a team such as Jerry and Kate and I develop and work with them and then bring this back to you. We will be asking you for direction in an executive session as to, okay, you know, where do you see us going? What are the parameters that you want us to work within? And Jerry and will be providing a lot of that also, because now as the administrative officer, he, you know, helps guide the ship for us. So we'll be developing these parameters. But hopefully what we're going to end up doing is coming to the commissioners with, here's a final offer. Here's what we think is a good package that we've been able to put together for the county. Anyway, so that's also going to be a little bit new for me, because we haven't had the benefits of having an administrator here to help guide the whole process. But I see that is what we really want to do is bring you a good final product. So any questions on that first segment?
So in the past, was Jen's Tommy usually on that team?
No, in the past we did a lot more close work with the commissioners. We come in and say, okay, here's the first offer. What do you think? How should we move forward? And so then we go and do our bargaining and we come back. Okay, here's the counter offer. How do you want to move forward? But I see a lot more of that going on with Jerry, that Jerry will be giving us, you know, direction on, you know, yeah, I don't like this. Yeah, I do like this, you know, that sort of thing. But at the same time, we still want the commissioners, we want you to accept our final product, so we want to know what you're thinking at
yeah,
the same
I mean,
time.
If there's, I mean, I think, so I went through this once with, last collective bargaining I was a part of was with a fire union, and in product, you know, what I think could have been better, but we were given the task to negotiate the best contract that we could for, in this case, the city, and then to present that. And my hope is that that could be the marching orders that we are given with collective bargaining, is to negotiate the best contract possible for the county and present that to the Board of Commissioners. But of course, you know, if there's a kind of a bright line somewhere that's in your mind that you're thinking about where, you know, you really want to see X, Y, or Z, I think that's where we would really want to know where those, if there was a bright line on any particular aspect of a contract. Because I went through the process where we negotiated the best contract possible, and then our city council did not approve the contract. And I think that what Karen's alluding to and what we discussed is we want to make sure that we can get to the point where the final product will be a product that you can support.
Right, so we don't want to...
What didn't you like about your contract?
They just thought it was too expensive, you know? I mean, it was just, that's really what all it came down to. We tried to get them down as far as we could. And it was a different state, and you know, the union environment was different. You know, and that's in the state of Missouri. There were a number of fire unions that were operating without contracts. You know, and so our attorney gave us the guidance to negotiate the best possible contract, and then the city council gave it an up or down vote. And in this case, they gave it a down vote. So I've been through that process. Want to try to avoid that to the best extent that we can, mm-hmm. You know, because...
So we don't want to exclude the commissioners, but we do want to buffer the commissioners so that you're not getting a lot of the political heat, that we'll take the political heat in the beginning and then bring you a good product. But at the same time, if there's something in particular that you want to see happen, please, you know, communicate that to me so that we can make sure we keep that in mind as we're moving forward. What I anticipate is we need to have some guidance on what you would consider acceptable. You know, you're going to tell us, well, we will never approve a 5% COLA. But we don't want to go to a 1% either. You know, so something of that sort, maybe some guidance of what, like he was saying, a bright mm-hmm. line. You know, here's what we just don't want to consider this.
Yeah.
And if we were to deviate from that, we would probably have to have a really good reason, such as, okay, we got them to give up this so that we can go to this, and here's the cost, you know, and so that's our job between the three of us, is to figure out the costs of all of these things. And so if we're going to give you, okay, we'll give you an extra 0.5% COLA, but then what are we getting back from it? And those are the kind of things that we'll be working
through. So do you look at the cost of living? The only one I'm aware of that's close is Portland, where you can actually look at the number and see what the consumer index price increases have been in Portland.
So. Right. There's a LGPI produces a CPI report each month for us, and it does include, there's an urban workers, and there's a Portland index. I'm trying to remember the others. And so in the past we have not used the CPI in our negotiations. It's not unheard of though, and it's a good basis for starting. You know, saying, okay, well, the CPI has tanked for the last 2 years. It's been a 0.8. So we're not going to start at a 5% COLA, so let's not even start there. Let's, you know. But there are contracts that say, you know, the next year's cost of living will be the CPI based on, and you identify which one you're going to use. And then you can also say, but not more than this and not less than this. You know, you can set some parameters on it also. So there's a variety of options of what you could do. You know, we could definitely could use the CPI as a way of determining the cost of living index, or the COLA that would be applied. In the past, these have been three-year contracts, and so we would be looking at, you know, what the cost would be over the next 3 years.
And I'm curious, because I'm new to this from Morrow County, is there a place to look at the history? What have we done historically? You know, compare, because I know when they receive the final offer, if I were in their shoes, I'm like, how do I know, is this average? Is this normal? Mm-hmm. What's the
I
history?
I can produce that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just so there's, like, history. When you ask for kind of guidance.
Relative to what?
Yeah. Exactly.
And I have enough. The compensation committee booklets also had all of the, just the COLAs. Mm-hmm. It didn't have the other portions that may have gone with it, such as boot allowances,
yeah.
You know, or...
when did it go up to 200?
Yeah, right. You know, or the big thing that's eating at me right now is the VEBA that the sheriff's office negotiated many years ago. And I'm still mad about it because it was supposedly a cost savings to us because they were proposing to take this different health insurance program and the premiums were much less. And so from the savings of that premium, they wanted us to contribute to a VEBA program, $125 a month per employee, which is then theirs to use for medical things. And based on the numbers that we were given, everything, we were coming out ahead. We were saving money by doing that. And 6 weeks after we inked the contract, the premium skyrocketed 33%. Well, I know that their business agent sits on the Teamsters Trust. He knew that was coming, and it just made me mad. And so we went to them and said, okay, we either renegotiate or you're going to lose an employee. And they said, fine, we've got an open position, don't fill it. Okay. And so for the next 6 or 8 years, every time the sheriff would come in and want to fill a position, I'd remind them that we didn't fill that because of this change. And then finally they got... to the point where they said, well, but we need more employees. And so they've been adding employees. And so this round, I'm going to propose that we delete the VEBA because we're not getting a cost savings from it at all. So maybe that's just an aside. That's something I'm
going to work
on. Yeah. But it still makes me mad because they knew what they were doing. They knew they were going to negotiate something they couldn't keep.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we would, look at all the full compensation program. I mean, health insurance, what flexibility we would have for health insurance, our retirement program. You know, we'd want to consider each one of those various methods of compensation.
Right. Mm-hmm. And both of those are big things mm-hmm. right now, especially retirement programs. And any change to the retirement program is going to take, once we decide what we want to do, it's going to, and you too, it's going to take quite a period of time then to get it through the unions, because then the unions have to agree to it also. And I will be asking the Teamsters to identify one member to sit on an in-county committee to be a part of those discussions, so that they're at the table, they have some input, and they also hear all the information, and then they take it back to their membership and explain it to their membership. And so we'll be putting that forward as, you know, this, we're going to be looking at the retirement program probably within the period of this collective bargaining agreement, and we'd like to have somebody appointed to be part of that conversation. And by bringing them into the table, then they're part of the process. And generally that works a lot better. Okay, so the next newsletter is Trends at the Bargaining Table, What to Expect, and Oregon's new sick time law. I do believe we'll be discussing that with the Teamsters, in that we need to make sure our collective bargaining agreement reflects current state law. And of course, health insurance will definitely be something to keep in mind, but I don't see any big things coming on the horizon on that one, other than what I'm going to throw out. And then, of course, they're going to make sure that we're aware that they have a right to organize, and that they're going to continue to do that. And that's the basis of the PECBA, the Public Employees Collective Bargaining Act. Gives them the right to do that, and we can't interfere with that in any way whatsoever, not even in jokes, because we don't want people to get take it wrong and then get sideways with us. So those are some of the trends. The next article was on preparing to bargain collectively, the initial planning. And they start their planning based on this article way earlier than we do. But again, it's time to think about what do we want to accomplish in this round of bargaining with the sheriff's office, and who do we want on the bargaining team. And then when we do have a bargaining team, I generally ask each person on the team to go through the collective bargaining agreement and see if there's anything that they in particular would like to see changed. I always ask finance if there's anything that's come up that they would like to have added in that's been a question, a point of contention, or anything of that sort, as to what's going on that would be beneficial for them to include in a collective bargaining agreement. The next article talks about identifying priorities. And one of the things that I appreciate that they put in here is assessing the relationship. When I first came to this position, they were already in the middle of collective bargaining, and it had reduced down to kissing match. And it was ugly, and it was terrible. And we had a lawyer from Portland who was representing Morrill County. And It was a tiger. It was a tiger that came in, and they were going to really, you know, take it to the mat and everything. But in Morrill County, we sit next to the union members at ball games, and we sit next to them at church. And so we don't necessarily benefit from getting into a very confrontational bargaining. And so assessing the relationship, if we can keep the relationship at least civil, it's really very good. And right now, I think we have a pretty good working relationship. There's always going to be tugs here and there and push back and forth, because the union business agents, that's their job. they're supposed to do those kinds of things. It's like when I worked for an insurance company. I knew I worked with insurance agents. Agents sell things. That's what they do. So, yeah, okay, we know you're supposed to sell things, but you can't sell this to this person because it's totally ineligible. Same thing with the union. They have to come in. They have to protect their members. They have to... they have to justify their job. They have to make sure that they're doing everything for their membership, such as when we had due process, the business agent was sitting there and advising the members on what they should do. Unfortunately, when we did do that one, the business agent pushed over a letter of resignation and said, you need to sign that. I was like, yes. But, you know, that's what they do. They protect their members. That's what they're supposed to be doing, and they're supposed to be doing the best they can for their members. It's a negotiation. It's kind of like an SIP. It's a negotiations. We have to come up with the best possible product, and they're doing the same thing for their members. And then on the back of that was a case study from the Employment Relations Board from Lane County, and I just reminds me over and over again, I'm so glad that I'm not in government in Lane County. When you talk to the staff for the commissioners in Lane County, you talk to anybody in Lane County, they've got so many people telling them how to do their jobs. And I really am glad I'm not in Lane County. But anyway, I provided this case on the ERB just so you can kind of see how the ERB process works. And so I'll leave that. I'm not going to go through it any further. I'll leave that for you to look through when you have a cup of coffee or something. You can read through it. But it's a good example of how the ERB works. The next article was on preparing proposals. Generally, what we ask is we ask the union to make the first offer, and they send to us what they're looking for. And from that, we can kind of take a temperature of what's going on and how things are looking across the table. And from that, then we can craft a counter proposal. And prior to being in this position, I was a union member, and I did go to the meetings where they were planning what they were going to do when they got to bargaining. And I heard them say, well, you got to ask for more so we have something to give up. So I'm like, okay, so I know they're going to ask for the sky, and they are expecting to have some of it shot down. They almost always ask for them Friday after Thanksgiving. Well, that's their token, though. Okay, we'll give that up for, you know, this or that or whatever. And so it's a game back and forth. And so I try to make sure that our response to them is going to cut to the chaff as much as we can, because I don't have a need for this to go on for a long time. You give me your first offer, okay, I'm going to give you a reasonable counteroffer, and hopefully we can sign it and settle it from there. We've negotiated one or two contracts actually by email. We never actually met face to face. We did the whole thing by email. It was great. Because their business agents, if they're coming from Portland, they don't want to drive out here. And then when you try to coordinate the schedules of Bruce with their business agent, and I just say, I will clear my schedule. If you guys can find a day that both of you can be here, I'll clear my schedule to do whatever. But anyway, that's my philosophy, is I want to give a good counter proposal. Here's a good thing, and hopefully we can work down from there. And the big question is always compensation. There are many times there's nothing else really on the table other than compensation. Unions were originally organized for safety of the employees. That's what drove it back at the turn of the century. Mines and sweatshops were the two places that drove the creation of unions and having unions. Union number one is in Butte, Montana, in the mines. And so that's where the unions came from originally. And so they will push forward on something operationally that is safety related. But they cannot tell us how to run our business. We run our business. I shouldn't say they can't. They may not tell us how to run our business. They will try, and they have tried a lot. But we run our business. They can push on safety issues and on compensation and on benefits. But we decide hours. We decide who gets training within reasonable, equitable, non-discriminatory parameters. We decide job assignments, et cetera. And the union will try to get in on that and help us make our decisions. And that's our job. That's what we get to do. We will do our job. And I also remind people the collective bargaining agreement works two ways. It tells us what we can and cannot do, and it also tells the employees what they can and cannot do. So it works both ways. So those are the big things that we talk about when we're preparing proposals. Ground rules and final preparations. Generally, at the first meeting, we sit down, we go through the ground rules, and generally our ground rules are, do you want this public or a closed meeting? And we make them closed meetings. We don't do them public for the general public to participate in. Another reason not to have a quorum of our commissioners present. Another ground rule generally is when we come to a tentative agreement, so there'll be, you know, we want this particular thing, we want this particular thing, we want this thing. We'll make a tentative agreement on this first one, because that's something pretty simple. And we work through on the others. When we've come to all of our tentative agreements, we make an agreement that the union will take those tentative agreements that we've worked out, they will take them back to their membership, and they will recommend approval of them. And on the same side, I will say, if we've come to tentative agreements on these, I will take these to the commissioners, and I will recommend approval of them. But we can't commit the commissioners to anything, and they can't commit the membership to anything. They still have to vote. I still bring it to the commissioners. You have to vote. But we will agree that when we've hammered down through this, we will support it when we bring it to the commissioners. They will support it when they take it to the members. And that's really important, in my opinion, that if we're going to go through this process and spend the time and energy of negotiating, you've got to take it with a due pass recommendation. So those are the important ones. Another ERB decision that goes on about, is it an unfair labor practice to not fill a position? And then this was a good example of how one small circumstance can change the whole thing. And so again, read that over coffee sometime. And then if you have questions, please let me know. Another one, what is surface bargaining? That ERB weighs in on that. The gist of collective bargaining is we have to come to the table with an open mind, willing to discuss options, and then move forward from there. We can't just show up and say, okay, what's your proposal? Yeah, okay, we don't like it. Done. You know, we have to make a good faith effort to bargain, to hear their proposals, to work through them. And so that's an ERB decision there also. Okay, so any questions on any of that portion of it?
Nothing precludes you from preparing how you would do things as opposed to reacting to their
proposal.
Nothing
would preclude that at all. But I have to make a good faith analysis of what they have proposed and consider what they have proposed.
Well, I'm saying with negotiations on the horizon, you can sit down and look what we've crafted in the past and go, okay, here's what we're willing to offer, and have that as the template that you work from as opposed to theirs.
We could, but it's best to let them propose first because they may not be asking for as much as we're willing to give.
Kind of like buying a used car. Whoever throws out the first price loses.
And so in our history, we have let the unions propose first, simply for that reason.
Have you ever had the union propose something and their first proposal that was less than what you would have given?
No, because if you don't ask, I can't say yes.
Yeah.
And so they're going to ask high, so they have some give. You know, they may say, you know, well, we'd accept 2.5, but we're going to ask 3.
I have a finance question.
Mm-hmm.
When finance is asked to calculate different scenarios, do we take a look at, for example, just the sheriff's office, because it is a 3-year contract, or, for example, compensation? If they approach us and say, we want 5%, and we take a look at, well, this is what 5% looks like, this is what 4.3, et cetera.
Right.
Have we provided you with what it looks like for just the sheriff's department plus the entire county? Because my observation is these COLAs that get in a union kind of set a bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then yes. When compensation committee comes along, there's a bar.
Mm-hmm. So when we do the negotiations, the numbers that are analyzed as mm-hmm. part of the negotiations are just for the union.
Right.
But now, that doesn't mean that we don't consider what that impact is going to be on everything
else. See, and that's what
else.
I'm thinking. When we...
But as part of my notes that I have, which can be subpoenaed, mm-hmm. I am looking at
union.
They're not. Yeah, they're not negotiating for all employees. They're negotiating for their members.
Well, I know, but not at the meeting, but on the side, we should really calculate big picture, 3 years, what it would look like in countywide at that COLA level.
Right. Because if we give one union a 4%, we know mm-hmm. what the next union is going to come in and ask for. And so it does compound. But in my notes that I have for the analysis of their offer, mm-hmm. it is just for the union.
Right, right. But I was just thinking,
Keep
the big picture in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do. Because next year we're bargaining with 2 unions.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we do with the teachers, is going to be
are they all 3-year contracts? All
presently
unions?
They are. We have done less than 3-year contracts for special circumstances. And one of them was when healthcare was just all over the place. We did a 1-year contract so that then next year we could come back and reevaluate this healthcare and do all of that again. So, you know, it could be less than 3 years. It could be, you know, 1 year, 2 year. I would not recommend in the present climate, I would not recommend more than 3 years because of the way things are changing. Health insurance is, you know, huge, and that's a huge part of negotiations is health insurance. In 3 years, it could change a lot. And we have done midterm bargaining, which we can request a midterm bargain on health insurance. And so we... Generally, it's Morrow County going to the union saying, we would like to do midterm bargaining on this subject only, and we limit the subject that we're willing to discuss. We're not throwing this open for everything under the sun. We want to talk about this particular thing. And so then we would come back and bargain that particular thing and then create a memorandum of understanding or agreement between us that would follow through until the next collective bargaining.
Is it just 2 unions?
We have Teamsters represents the sheriff's office, and then we have AFSCME, and they've got the general employees and the road. Mm-hmm. So they're separate units under the same...
Not separate negotiations, though.
They are, but it's the same business agent, and so he tries to combine them if we can.
And are they on offset years?
Teamsters is 1 year, and we've combined road and general employees into 1 year, again, because business agent doesn't want to come out here 2 years in a row. They'd like to do it all at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with getting Bruce in here, too. So they're generally pretty similar, but we could do them different years. We could propose them to be a little bit different, but then they'd want to know why we were doing them in separate years.
Yeah.
And then as part of that, AFSCME has the general employee unit, it has the road unit, and then the hospital has a unit of AFSCME that are all under the same umbrella. So they have an executive committee then that presides over all 3 of those unions. So when they have their annual meeting, it's all 3 the hospital is part of that annual meeting. So that's just so you understand how that relationship works.
Can I ask one more hypothetical question? If, for example, we sign a 3-year contract for the union agreement this year, mm-hmm. and we run some analysis and we might change something regarding retirement contributions mm-hmm. for, let's say, new employees, total hypothetical, would the 3-year contract void the change on a new employee that we hire?
We would have to negotiate and do a midterm bargaining on that particular subject.
Okay.
And that's why we would have a member sit on the in-house committee that goes through that. We did that with reclassification and health insurance changes.
Okay.
Have them come in, and then we craft a proposal, and each union that's affected then has to take it to their membership for a vote and sign off on it.
Okay.
So I'm anticipating, we've talked about changes to the retirement program, and I'm anticipating that that will be happening during the term of the Teamsters contract, and that's why I want just to tell them ahead of time, you know, we're looking at it, we have no idea what we're going to come up with and how it's going to move forward, but we want you to have somebody at the table.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, any other questions on that handout material? Okay, so then I'm going to switch gears and go to this handout. This is a PowerPoint presentation that was at the City County Insurance annual conference that Kate and I both attended. And then this little handout that talks about employer unfair labor practices and mandatory and permissive subjects of bargaining actually go with this PowerPoint presentation. And so this was prepared by Pierre Robert of LGPI, and I had to get special permission from them to use these slides, and I had to promise them I would not use them for anything other than my commissioner training. And looking back, I can understand why I'm doing that, because that's what they do. They sell services. They don't want to give away something that they should be selling. So this is the high view of the Collective Bargaining Act. So the purpose of the PECBA is to provide a uniform basis for recognizing the right of public employees to join organizations of their choice and to be represented by them in their relations with public employers. And that right there is the heart and meat of the whole thing. It also obligates employers and unions to negotiate in good faith with each other. We negotiate grievances, disputes, and then we sign written agreements. So we've had one grievance recently, but it did not come through the union. Now that I think about it, the union refused it, but the employee brought it forward. So if an employee says, I've been wronged, so they go to their union representative. The union representative is going to pull out the collective bargaining agreement because they have to be able to say, this particular article is what's being violated. They have to be able to point to, this is what's being violated. And so then we discuss about, okay, is it truly being violated? Is there misconception, miscommunication, or what's going on? And so if there is a grievance, we have an obligation to meet with them and come to decisions on it. And if Morrow County says, this is our decision, we're sticking by it, and they disagree with it, they can take it on for further discussion. But that'll be discussed a little further in here. But anyway, the basic thing is the PECBA gives the employees the right to organize, and it requires that the governmental agency and the employees meet to discuss. The PECBA also identifies that they represent employees who are not elected and employees who are not management and employees who are not confidential employees, which means confidential would be somebody who is at the bargaining table or is directly involved with creating our bargaining offers. So the principal, the basic right is the principal of an exclusive representative who represents all of the employees in a given bargaining unit and establishes the procedures for selecting that representative. So some unfortunate counties have 6 to 8 different unions that they're working with. And, you know, we're down to 3, and that's doing pretty good in my opinion. You hear about Umatilla County has a bargaining unit just for their deputy district attorneys, too, which I'm surprised that they have a union for professionals of that sort. But anyway, there's any number of unions that we could be working with, and so we've got 3, and we're doing pretty good in my opinion with that. The PECBA also requires that collective bargaining take place on a defined range of issues called employment relations, more commonly referred to as mandatory subjects of bargaining. And so that's where we go to this that came in your emails earlier. And on the second page, it has a list of things that are mandatory subjects of bargaining and things that are permissive. So mandatory subjects of bargaining, basically anything that has to do with compensation of any sort. So payment of wages, overtime, holiday pay, step increases, incentive pay, things of that work. Hours of work, including defining the work week, scheduling of hours. And that's to a point. We still can tell the employees that, okay, we're going to change from working 5/8 to working 4/10, and we have a right to do that. So I disagree a little bit on this mandatory, but I don't want to confuse the issue too much. Vacations, including pay, which is a big thing, and scheduling procedures, whether they can bump. So somebody with seniority comes along and wants to take vacation this particular week. Somebody with not as much seniority is already signed up for that week. Can that senior employee bump the other employee out, even though they've already bought their airfare and such? Well, that's a family fight. That's between the union members, because we follow the collective bargaining agreement, and that's between them. They've got to work it out. Presently, I don't believe we have bumping schedules in our vacation procedures. We do in other things such as promotions and that sort of thing. But that's something they could bargain in. Sick leave benefits, retirement benefits, health care benefits, discipline and grievance procedures, management rights to a point, drug testing after hire, terms and conditions of probation upon hire, and probation and safety issues. Those are the things that we must bargain with the unions about. And so basically anything else is a permissive thing. We can agree to bargain. We can agree to discuss it. Generally, it's in our best interest in relationship building to do that if we can. But if it's, again, if it's a bright line, we don't have to.
Where'd that page come from?
This is part of this that was prepared by the lawyer at LGPI. So this was actually created as part of this PowerPoint presentation.
Hmm. I would think most of the things under the whole second block there, you know, hours of work, defining a work week, scheduling of hours, I'm really surprised.
Services provided to the public.
I'm really surprised that those would be a mandatory bargaining area.
And so anyway, depending on the situation, maybe we'd want to sit down at the table, maybe we would not. But generally, it's in our best interest to at least hear them and hear what their concerns are. But that doesn't mean we have to do what they want us to do. We do have to come to the table, we do have to hear them, we don't have to agree. And then that's when we get into the lawyers doing their thing. So the basic rules going on. It gives most public employees a right to strike. The strike prohibited are police, firefighters, guards at correctional and mental institutions, parole and probation officers for adults, public transit workers, deputy district attorneys, and emergency telephone workers. Those people are not allowed to strike because of the interests of the safety of the communities. So they are not permitted to strike. Everybody else is. But then you go to binding arbitration for those, and that's really not a fun process to go through either. The PECPA provides for dispute resolution. That includes mediation, fact-finding. And again, that's another very, very much something that we want to avoid getting into this arbitration, because it just makes everybody, everybody gets mad, basically, throughout the entire thing. There's so many rules, and the only people that win out of it is the ERB and the attorneys who are getting their fees out of the whole thing. Unless it's something really important, and then I'll go to the mat on something like that. The basic rules, again, it provides for enforcement of the act and for enforcement of written agreements between employers and employees by a state agency called the Employment Relations Board. So then it says, what if your collective bargaining agreement is inconsistent or contrary to state or federal law, established policies, or past practice? Well, state or federal law is always going to rule. We will not intentionally violate a state or federal law, and that will always supersede anything else. The next comes the collective bargaining agreement. The collective bargaining agreement supersedes our personnel policies and just about any other policy. However, if the collective bargaining agreement is silent and does not address the issue, then our policies come into play. And then past practice. And past practice is actually a legal term for us, that if we can show that past practice has shown that we've done this for, you know, this many years, we do have some legal standing. But hopefully we're going to get our past practice and our policies aligned, which is one of our big goals that we've been working on for the last year and a half, and we're still moving forward trying to do all of that. So I'm going on, I'm on to page 6. Inconsistencies between the collective bargaining and past practice. Generally, the collective bargaining agreement is going to supersede that, but not always, but we do have a responsibility to meet and confer if there is a disagreement about that. We don't have to come to an agreement, but we do have to meet and confer. And we have to be willing to hear their side of it, and not get into surface bargaining where we're like, okay, we're here, we're sitting at the table, we're listening, go ahead. We're not changing our mind. We have to truly go in to hear what they're having to say. Well, and that goes on to the next page. Then page 7 says, what does good faith mean? And it means a bargain with a sincere willingness to come to an agreement. We have to, if they can prove that we already had a final agreement drafted and we had no intention of changing it, then we could be charged with an unfair labor practice for not bargaining in good faith. And that goes on to page 8 then. It says, what does good faith mean? It says, does not require that you agree or that you make concessions. It just means that you're willing to hear what they have to say. Continued on page 9. So our central obligations to meet and confer or bargain in good faith with the exclusive representative, agree to put the agreements so bargained into writing and sign them, and to obey those agreements. So then on the bottom of page 10, they're referencing this part of this handout that talks about unfair labor practices. And it, you hear the word unfair labor practice thrown about sometimes kind of as a threat, but really an unfair labor practice means you're not dealing equitably with your unions. You're trying to discriminate in some manner or something of that sort. And we do not want to get into an unfair labor practice complaint of any kind. And I believe as long as we deal with our unions pretty straightforward, fairly openly, I don't think we're going to have a problem with that. But that is something to keep in mind and to consider. So there's information on that. So on page 11, it talks about the scope of bargaining, and we've already touched on mandatory subject to bargaining, permissive subjects of bargaining, and prohibited subjects of bargaining. And I should be able to tell you a prohibited subject of bargaining, and I can't off the top of my head. But if I come up with a good example, I'll let you know. But we cannot bargain something that would violate a state law or a federal law. So then it talks about what policies and practices may be implemented unilaterally and which ones must be bargained. And again, that goes back to the mandatory and what the police is subject to bargaining. And so then the question comes up, well, what if we can't come to an agreement on a new contract? What happens? And at that point, we have the right to just roll over the agreement that we had in place this last year and just move forward. Or we can move forward and just say, well, we haven't come to agreement, so nobody's getting a cost of living increase until we come to an agreement. And we did that 3 years ago, I think, with the sheriff's unit, because they didn't even reach out to us until they have 180 days to bargain, and they reached out to us like at day 175. And so we were bargaining into September, and so we did not give cost of living increases to anyone in the sheriff's unit. We held on to them. And then, so we advised finance what we were doing, and so they had spreadsheets, so they had the retro pay all calculated, so they would know exactly how much to pay. But that was our hook to get them to the bargaining table and get things moving forward, is that you don't get a COLA until we get this thing squared around, because we're not going to give you a COLA that was more than what we end up agreeing to. And then we got to figure out how we're going to get our money back from you, because we won't ever get it back from you. And we don't want to give you less than what you would normally get, because then calculating everything else from there would just be a headache. So we just held on to the COLAs. And that was kind of the incentive to keep the bargaining going, keep things going. But so that was, you know, that was a push, but that wasn't necessarily being snotty about the whole thing. We were just saying, we got to get this bargained, get it done.
Yeah, I think that was about the time I became a commissioner.
It could be. So anyway, there's the big overview of collective bargaining. Any particular questions at this time? You're always welcome to ask me questions if you come up with something else. But I just kind of wanted to give you the overview of how that process works and what we'll be doing. And as I said, this is the first time I've had an administrator to work with me side by side. And so I'm going to be learning this time too.
So what is the plan with the? You're expecting an offer this week, but yet the sheriff's office and finance are not. Undersheriff haven't.
They haven't. I've reached out to him twice and said, you know, I'd like to sit down and go through the contract with you so we can talk about what we're going to do. And I haven't heard from them. And so when I get the first offer, I'll let them know I've got a first offer. And if you want to come visit, I'm going to be snobby. I'm going to tell them, if you want to see it, you've got to come see me. You can come talk to me, and then we can talk about everything all at once. And I'm sure that when I do that, then I'm sure they'll be showing up at the table. But that's going to be my hook to get them to come sit with me, because I'm not going to put out a first offer and then have them say, oh, yeah, we wanted to change this too. Like, no, we do it all.
The sheriff all and the undersheriff are not that part of the union.
No.
So how does that work where you got a department head like that, and they're essentially, for lack of a better word, on your team or on your
management? They're on the proposal team, maybe is what I should call it. They help craft the proposal if they see something they want to change, like food allowance, or something of that sort. Then they would provide that information because they understand the operations side of it and how it impacts operations and things of that sort. I'll be working with Jerry very closely about what kind of cost of living and health insurance benefits kinds of things. And so that's really more our arena is the benefits and their arena is the operations. And so we have to, work all together to come up with a proposal package to put forward.
So at this point, your plan is someone from the Sheriff's Department, yourself, Jerry, and then also a finance person, you said?
Well, at the table, I would recommend just three people, myself, yeah. The collective the labor council, and a sheriff representative. I don't know, I haven't asked Jerry about yet.
That's where I'm at with this union. I think that's the right team.
The proposal team would include Jerry, Kate, maybe Rhonda, the sheriff, the undersheriff, as we create the proposal.
I think we can,
sitting at the actual table, there'd only be three people.
And who did you say?
Myself, labor council, and a management person from the sheriff's office. Because they know the questions to ask that I don't know to ask. About, well, okay, so why do you want to do that? We already do this, so why would you want to do that? I don't know those questions to ask, and so that's why that management person is really valuable. Kind of like when Commissioner Russell says, well, I don't know the questions to ask that maybe this other commissioner would know to ask. You know, so same principle.
Okay, works out better for you.
Are the current union contracts on the S-Drive?
They're on the S-Drive and the website.
And the website.
I'm still waiting to hear the answers to those questions you asked.
So after you're going to get the off-road, then you'll reach out to the sheriff's office, and then what will be the next step?
We'll be crafting our counter-proposal. And so we've got a meeting set up for June 12th to sit down together to talk.
This proposal team? No, that's with the union.
With the union.
And when does their contract expire? Is it the end of June?
June 31st. June 30th. Mm-hmm. And so this is pretty true to form. They wait until the last minute. And I also have to say that their business agent told me, Karen, I have no intention of coming out there to bargain until Columbia Gorge is thawed. It's like, well, I really kind of expected that,
No guarantees this year.
Yeah, it could be.
Tom says snow in Mayville and Fossil this morning.
Wow.
It's like, really?
So on that June 12th meeting, do you usually come at that point in the process? Do you usually come to something that you're prepared to pass a recommendation on, or is there usually more than one meeting? How does that usually work?
Again, it's going to depend on what proposal they give to us, but hopefully I've got latitude to do some negotiating right there at the table. And we can do a little give and take. And if we could come to an agreement at the table that day, that'd be awesome. This one, and I don't want to get too far into this without going into an executive session, but I expect this proposal that I'm thinking I want to put forward is going to take more than one meeting. Because they're going to have to go back and talk to their membership seriously about this proposal that I want to make. But I think it's something that we're going to have to do that we can't afford to keep going the way we've been going. So any discussions that I have with the commissioners about true collective bargaining proposals is executive session.
Okay. And so when in that process do those begin to happen? What's been past process, first of all?
In the past, when I would get the first proposal, I would bring it to the commissioners in executive session, and the commissioners would give me parameters and say go forward with this. And that's why I said we're learning with having an administrator here who can help craft that proposal for us. I shouldn't say proposal, craft the parameters, help craft those parameters. So like I said, I'm still kind of learning how this works when you have a county administrator.
And I think that, you know, we can touch bases with the board in executive session to understand, do you have these bright line objectives that you're going to look for? Because ultimately this contract comes before you, and you vote on that contract. So we would want to know, so we can direct our negotiating team to at least understand kind of what those bright line proposals would be. But then the thought would be that the commissioners would not be negotiating this contract, because the commissioners will ultimately vote on the contract, but provide staff if there are these broader parameters that we need to be aware of, and then otherwise staff would try to negotiate basically the best deal for the county possible.
So you're proposing that there's no involvement from commissioners until the proposal to ratify?
Well, we could have an executive session early, like pretty much any time would be my thought.
Yes. So what are you proposing the process looks
like? I would like to have an executive session with the commissioners to get your parameters, to know where you want us to go. So then we have some idea of what our parameters are going to be, and then I can evaluate whether I think I can sell this to you guys or not. That's truly what it ends up doing, is that we come to an agreement with the union. I've got to sell it to you guys, and I've got to know what is acceptable and is not acceptable to you. So I think we need to have an executive session early on, and well before this June 12th date, so that we can have a proposal put forward.
Yeah, I think maybe the 31st of this month. I mean, we could do it in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Is that reasonable, Karen?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very reasonable. We give you an opportunity to think about what's important to you guys, how you want to move forward. And the executive session, we cannot exclude the media, but we can exclude just about anybody else, depending on who it is. And I would recommend that we keep it down to the bare minimum of who should be in the executive session.
In the past, the media hasn't shown an interest in what we've done, but they've shown more of an interest in county government overall this year, so I don't know what he'll...
And I don't think he will be interested.
Okay.
He's generally, you guys figure it out. Now, if we were in a very contentious negotiations, that might be a different situation. And so I would, my recommendation is that we'd have Jerry and we'd have Kate. Be up to Kate whether she wanted to include Rhonda or not, and myself, and sheriff and undersheriff, and whoever they appoint as there would be people that I would recommend be included with this discussion, so that everybody understands where we are and what we're trying to accomplish. Does that sound like an acceptable plan with you guys?
Mm-hmm.
If you have to do it, it's acceptable.
Okay.
Okay, so that's, I'll let Roberta know, and we'll schedule an executive session there for the 31st.
Let's do that.
And you can be thinking about what you would like to bring forward. You're very welcome to contact me anytime to ask questions or bounce ideas around or anything of that sort.
Do you ever run into management folks that are maybe sympathetic, not the word, but sympathetic to the cause of the, maybe
yes.
They come up through there, it's a large part of their life.
Correct. They were very avid and active union members prior to being promoted.
Yeah.
And yes.
That's kind of posed some challenges.
It does.
It's almost not fair to have them necessarily helping you craft it, something for the union.
Well, the objective.
Yeah, and that's where Jerry
that's
and I
why we have a yeah, we'll use the team approach for that one. Okay.
Because, you know, they may propose that and I'll be going, why?
Yeah. Okay.
So you remember your household that really wants that? Oh, okay. You know, those sorts of things. And unfortunately, as a supervisor or a manager who's been promoted out, that's a really difficult place to go in. Bob Nairns at the road department had been road department for a lot of years and was promoted to the assistant public works director. And he got burned pretty bad a couple of times because he was very much, you know, oh yeah, these are my buddies, these are my friends, oh, they would never try to do something like that. It wasn't really true. Yeah, he got burned a couple of times. It only took a couple times, and he's like, okay, that's it. That's it. It's
you kind of see the posing some issues.
Yeah.
Well, and along those lines, I would just say that there was a lot of comments made to me in campaigning about the great relationship the county had with unions and pressure, if you will, that's maintained. So I'm a little concerned that we are kept very closely in the loop. I don't want to go 360 from past practice where there's not conversation in executive session along the way and something then comes to us that this was all negotiated on your behalf and I didn't know anything about it. So I don't want to be eliminated from the process.
Okay.
I want at least informed an executive session level. I don't want it to become and then we get told what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very cautious of that because of those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it is important that we keep good relationships with
Absolutely.
The union. I mean,
not that you wouldn't.
No, I mean, it's a small county and some of those people are, you know, personal friends.
Yeah.
And that's not going to change or shouldn't change.
You don't want to feel like you're giving up the store to keep them happy.
No, exactly.
No, that's got to work both ways. I mean, they need to know that.
Sometimes less people in church is okay.
Yeah.
and I can appreciate your viewpoint on that. And certainly, I don't want to have any surprises coming at you.
Right.
Yeah.
So, anything else? Otherwise, I'll call it good and let you go on with the rest of your day.
This is great. Helpful.
Yeah.
So.
There will be more questions later.
Yep.
As the process unfolds.
That's just fine. Yeah. So anyway, this just gives you a little place to start.
Anything else on our agenda?
What's the time?
2:47.
2:47, all right.